Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this show, we highlight people's stories, we celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peter Santoscano. Welcome to episode 31 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Saturday, December 22nd, 2018. In the Art House, we feature astronomer and children's author Jeff Bennett. His books are out of this world. I mean, literally. The Max Science Adventure series and his other books have been read by NASA astronauts in space as they orbit the planet. He tells us about his new climate change-themed book, The Wizard Who Saved the World. We also hear your answers to the puzzler question. But first, we hear from a climate scientist. Dr. Catherine Hayhoe is such a bright and essential presence in the world today. She is a climate scientist, a professor in the Department of Political Science, and director of the Climate Science Center at Texas Tech University. She's also a brilliant climate communicator and the host of the Global Weirding web series. Dr. Hayhoe is highly accomplished and terribly busy teaching classes, doing research, public speaking, and I imagine occasionally sleeping. As someone trained as a volunteer lobbyist to lawmakers and other busy people, I began our interview by asking Dr. Hayhoe, how much time do we have to chat today?
I really do have a hard stop in 25 minutes, if not 20.
Okay, we'll be done in less than 20 minutes.
Okay. Let's do it.
You keep popping up all over the country at conferences and climate events. How on earth do you also do your research?
Well, doing a lot of the outreach that I do has affected my research, unfortunately, in a bad way, because I don't have enough time to write all the papers and do all the studies that I want to do. And in fact, I usually end up doing those between about midnight and 4 a.m, because that's the only time that I have nowadays to just focus and concentrate. But I would also say, in a positive note, that the research I do is very influenced by the engagement that I do with stakeholders. So with water managers and farmers and producers and city planners, they often have questions for me, very specific technical questions that I can't answer. So I go back and I do the research to answer those questions. One example is the most recent study that we just published a few weeks ago, which looked at what we expect to see happen to drought patterns here in Texas in the summer during the growing season. Up until now, the results have been kind of inconclusive. We know that we get droughts. We know that those droughts are likely to be stronger the warmer it gets because our evaporation rates speed up. But we actually went and did a study that showed that the high pressure systems that we get camping out over our region during exceptionally dry summers in the past are likely to get more frequent and stronger as a direct result of a changing climate, specifically driven by warmer temperatures in the Gulf of Mexico. So we didn't know that until I started to talk to people about water issues in Texas, and people started to really want some answers for what we expect to see to happen. So we went out and we did the research, and now we have an answer.
I heard you speak at the Citizens Climate International Conference in Washington, D.C. back in 2015, and your talk has really influenced this show a lot. You made it clear back then that most people don't need more science when it comes to climate change. We need to focus on common ground. And as a result, I've not had any other scientist on the show besides you. So in regards to climate communication and the science, what's changed since 2015 and what remains the same?
One of the biggest myths that we've bought into when it comes to a changing climate is the myth that it doesn't matter to me. And for a long time, we climate scientists had to address this through showing what was going to change in the places where we live. But today, we don't have to do that anymore. We can talk about what is actually happening today. And that is the greatest strength of the U.S. National Climate Assessment, which was just released recently, because it brings this down to the local level where we live. The fact that in many Northeast cities along the coast, high tide flooding has increased by a factor of 10 over the last 50 years. Or that wildfire is now burning twice the area in the western U.S. than it would if it weren't for a changing climate. Or the fact that Hurricane Harvey, almost 40% of the rainfall associated with that record-breaking storm, would not have occurred if the same storm had happened 100 years ago. We can now connect the dots directly between people's personal experience and why a changing climate matters.
Now, you're traveling a lot in the U.S. What do you see happening around the country? Who's responding to climate change? Like, what are you noticing?
Below the federal administration, there are so many people and organizations who are involved. There are states and cities, there's tribal nations, there's businesses, there's even energy companies, there's a lot of farming and producing organizations. People realize today that climate is changing and that we need to prepare for a very different future. And as the National Climate Assessment concludes, we are starting already to make those changes. We are starting to adapt to the changes that we're already seeing today. And we're even starting to shift to clean energy, which of course would reduce and hopefully eventually eliminate our carbon emissions. But as the National Climate Assessment concludes, we are not yet doing enough.
I think what happens is that people feel overwhelmed, right? I know we can focus a lot of energy on individual personal changes. Like, not that these are bad, but I worry sometimes that they may distract us from larger systemic and policy changes.
Mm-hmm. It isn't a case of either or. In fact, it's part of a cycle, because often the most important impact of personal choices that we make are the impact that they have on our own attitudes and on the information that we can share, the motivation that we can share with others. So yes, I do reduce my carbon footprint. I think very carefully on an almost daily basis about what activities I'm doing and what the carbon footprint is. But I recognize, first of all, that we live in an imperfect world. I can't even drive a fully electric vehicle here because there's no public charging stations within 200 miles. But I do what I can. I drive a hybrid. I eat lower down the food chain. I hang out my clothes to dry. But the biggest benefit I believe that these things give me is it gives me an opportunity to have conversations with people, to talk about how much I love my hybrid, about the fact that I do buy carbon credits from a great program called Climate Stewards to offset my footprint when I fly around the country talking to people about climate change. And the actions that I take in my daily life make me much more aware of the importance of talking about this, of voting about this, and what I love most about Citizens Climate Lobby, engaging with our elected officials from across the entire political spectrum to say, hey, I'm not going to ask you if you believe in climate change as if it's some type of religion. I'm going to ask you what we can do to work together to fix this thing for the benefits of all our constituents.
So most people listening right now are engaged and committed climate advocates. But it can get so frustrating when talking to people about climate change. It's like they almost blank out on us. And I understand the temptation to try to jar the public awake with warnings of impending doom. So what are your thoughts about using fear tactics to get people to listen up?
Oh, well, we have a Global Weirding episode about exactly that. So if you're not familiar with Global Weirding, and I know you are, check it out on YouTube. If you just Google Global Weirding or go to globalweirdingseries.com, we have a series of very short videos, like 5 to 6 minutes each, that address common questions. And one of them is it, when it comes to climate change, should we just scare the pants off people? Is that the best way to motivate people? And the answer, according to the social science, as well as just common sense, is unfortunately not. The way that we're built, fear provokes an immediate reaction to run away faster than the bear, or at least faster than the person beside us. That's what they teach you in Canada. But it's not going to sustain long-term action. For long-term action, we need hope. Rational hope, realistic hope, not Pollyanna hope. But we need hope and a vision of a better future. So absolutely, our urgency can compel us to act and to talk to people, which is the single most important thing that any of us can do as individuals. But when we talk to people, the number one most important thing to convey to people is hope. Hope for a better future.
Okay, so climate change is already upon us. We are working to mitigate it, to reduce pollution, and to decarbonize the economy. Now, for a lot of people, though, they're seeing we need to focus a lot on adaptation. In your own work and your own studies, what are you seeing about the roles of individuals and groups in adapting to climate change?
It's huge. I work with cities a lot, and cities really get it. They understand that cities are both uniquely vulnerable to a changing climate because of the high concentration of people in the city, the impervious surfaces, the urban heat island effect that make them more vulnerable to heavy rainfall and drought. But cities also have tremendous power to change. Cities can do things like, for example, acting to reduce their urban heat island effect through green roof programs and tree planting, so that as climate changes, getting warmer, they can actually lower the temperature of their microclimate. Cities can also do incredible things to help people reduce their carbon emissions, to promote clean energy and smart planning, which reduces the need for energy in the first place through things like, you know, replacing highways with public transportation and making walking and biking a viable option for thousands and even millions of people. Cities really are, I think, the key to the future. And that's why I'm so encouraged, and a lot of my hope comes from looking at what cities are doing.
Now, for the folks listening who want to increase their skills in speaking about climate change, what resources do you recommend?
My number one recommendation is our Global Weirding videos. We have over 30 of them now. They're super short. They address all of our frequently asked questions that you've probably heard, from is it too late to fix this thing, or what is that 2-degree number people keep talking about, or what's the difference between climate and weather? And we have a new series of Global Weirding episodes actually coming out based on the National Climate Assessment, where every episode talks about a different region of the US. So if you live in the Midwest, here's what's already happening where you live, and here's why it matters to you. If you live in the islands or the Southwest or the coasts. Then if people want more information, I would absolutely point people to the National Climate Assessment. You can find volume one online at science2017.globalchange.gov. And then you can find volume two online at NCA, that's NCA stands for National Climate Assessment, NCA2018.globalchange.gov. There's great summaries, graphics, pictures, and images explaining how climate is changing, why that matters to us, and what people are doing to respond.
Wonderful. Thanks. And I will have links in the show notes for listeners. Okay, before we end, I need to ask you something. You mentioned both hope and despair. As climate advocates, I feel we get stuck on this binary. I mean, people ask me all the time, do you feel hope or despair? So what do you think about this? So like these binaries, where do you fit on the hope and despair issue?
I don't really believe very strongly in binaries. Another binary that we buy into is that people are either yes or no on climate change, whereas in reality, most people are sort of in the middle. I strive to be exactly in the middle on hope and despair. Rational hope is what I'm aiming for, where I fully understand the science. I mean, I look at this stuff every single day. I'm just reviewing the National Climate Assessment right now, and region after region, we look at all of the negative, harmful impacts that are happening, and how can this not cause us to feel concern, anxiety, fear, and even despair? But at the same time, hope is what's going to get us to fix this thing, not despair, not fear, not panic or anxiety. So I actively go out and I look for hope. Hope isn't going to find us if we just sit here. If you just scan the headlines on whatever website you prefer, look at the headlines. They're all negative. They're all about the horrible things that have happened or the terrible things that somebody said or did. Hope is not going to come finding us. We have to go look for it. But when we go to look for hope, it's all around us. It's in small stories of what one or another individual CCL person might share of an encouraging conversation they had that really made a difference with their elected official. It's recognizing that here in Texas, we're already getting almost 20% of our electricity from clean energy sources, and we have 25,000 jobs in the wind energy industry in Texas alone. It's looking for amazing stories like how pay-as-you-go solar is revolutionizing sub-Saharan Africa, or how Indian coal companies are investing in solar energy. The world really is changing. It isn't changing fast enough, but it is already moving in the right direction. Climate change isn't a giant boulder sitting at the bottom of a hill with hardly any hands on it that we have to push up to the top of the hill somehow before it can start rolling downhill. No, that boulder is already starting to roll downhill, and it has millions of hands on it. We just have to get it moving faster.
All right, yeah, let's get that ball rolling faster. Dr. Hayhoe, thank you so much for joining us today on Citizens Climate Radio.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for everything you're doing, too. I have to say that CCL specifically, the work that people are doing just patiently behind the scenes, week after week, year after year, meeting with their elected officials and helping them understand how climate change isn't a liberal or conservative issue. It's a human issue. That work is a big part of what gives me hope.
You can learn more about Dr. Catherine Hayhoe at her site, catherinehayhoe.com. Also, check out Global Weirding on YouTube. Oh, they're so cute and smart and short. To get links to everything we chatted about, visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. Click on the Citizens Climate Radio link and go to episode 31. Oh, and it was shortly after my conversation with Dr. Hayhoe that I heard the good news about climate legislation that was introduced into the U.S. Congress. We celebrate your successes here at Citizens Climate Radio, and this is one of them, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act of 2018. Congratulations to the many folks listening who have been part of the volunteer advocacy work that has led to this historic moment. Now it is time for the Art House. Dr. Jeffrey Bennett is an astronomer, public speaker, and best-selling author. He wrote The Global Warming Primer. He also authored the wildly popular and award-winning children's book series featuring Max the dog. Dr. Jeff Bennett is committed to educating the public about science.
I spend most of my time as a writer trying to educate the public and college students and children about ideas in science that I think are particularly important to our civilization and to our survival. Climate change, global warming is probably the biggest issue that I think we face, but I think that's part of the larger picture of sort of general science literacy and understanding how we as a species and as individuals fit into this planet, to the universe, and to how we should try to live our lives with understanding of what they really mean, and then applying that kind of understanding to all the various issues that we face in the environment, with global warming, with war, with hatred, intolerance. All of these things to me tie back to having an idea of how science really works and what it's telling us about ourselves.
Now, as we already heard in her climate communication talks, Dr. Catherine Hayhoe makes it clear the public doesn't need more facts when it comes to climate change. Throwing more information is not helpful to them. And Jeff agrees.
I think when she says they don't need more science, it's because part of the problem that we get out in the media in particular is you get inundated with scientific details. And the details are just that. They're details. What very few people ever hear about is the very most basic science of global warming. You know, what I call the global warming 1, 2, 3. We know that greenhouse gases cause planets to be warmer than they would be otherwise. We know that we're adding more greenhouse gas to Earth's atmosphere through the burning of fossil fuels and other activities. And therefore, we know it's going to warm up as a result of what we humans are doing. That's the science that everyone needs to know. And I think that Catherine Hayhoe in her presentations makes that part of it clear too. We don't need to go too much beyond that though, because that's the key part, that if you get that, you really got 90% of the picture.
Creativity drives Jeff's desire to help the public understand science. His most inventive work comes in the full-colored illustrated children's books he creates with visual artists. While most of his illustrated children's books are about space, Jeff felt it was time to write about what was happening on Earth.
Well, so what I wanted to do with The Wizard Who Saved the World is I wanted to write a book that would teach kids about global warming, help them understand that it is a serious issue, but not in a way that would scare them, instead in a way that would inspire them to say, gosh, aren't I lucky to be growing up at a time when we get to solve this problem, because our solutions are going to make the world so much more of an incredible place. This boy, Diego, daydreams about being a wizard and doing all sorts of magical things. And then he learns about the problem of global warming, climate change, and starts to immediately think, gosh, I wish I was a wizard so that I could solve this problem with magic. And then when he realizes, well, you can't really do magic, he starts to think about all the ways that he might still help the world, different careers that he could do, and and so on. And at the end of the book, he's so inspired by all that that when he runs to tell his mother and his grandmother, he runs past a mirror, and when he looks at the reflection, he sees himself as a wizard after all. So my hope is that that gets kids to understand the science, understand the topic, but also to really be focused on what am I going to do to make this world a better place and help turn this problem into an opportunity for much better than we have today.
With this new topic of climate change for his children's books, Jeff realized he needed to work with a new visual artist to interpret the story. It actually took him a couple of years to find the right artist.
For my Max books, where he's traveling out in space, I needed space artists, right? And we have a very technical type of illustration because we want all the scenes to be scientifically accurate in terms of the colors and what you would see on different worlds and so on. But here we're dealing with something a little bit different. And I had in my mind this vision of like the wizard holding the earth in his hands, the way you see on the cover of the book. And, you know, I was looking for a couple of years. I was looking all over the place on the web, every place I went to see, you know, do I know an artist who can do what I'm imagining? And we had this open studios thing in Boulder where you can go from house to house of artists and see their work. And I happened to go into this one woman's house. Actually, a friend recommended that I go check it out. Her name is Roberta Collier Morales. And there she had a painting already hanging on the wall that was very, very similar in style to what I was looking for. And I asked her if she'd be interested in illustrating the book, and she said yes. And that's how it came about. So I would describe to her the type of scene that I wanted on each page, and then she would make it happen.
Roberta Collier Morales's illustrations are lush, warm, and vibrant. She captures the magic of Diego's imagination with images that almost seem to move on the page. The art and the text work well together. They tell a moving personal story. I got to speak briefly with Roberta Collier Morales about the book.
I was highly dyslexic when I was growing up, and they didn't have a word for it at the time. And so I really had this huge imagination. So I related to Diego in the story because Diego was a kid with a big imagination. And then I related to the story because he was using his imagination as a tool to help him deal with his problem, which was, I want to become a wizard because I want to fix things. So I wanted to become an artist because it was a way for me to relay my message. So emotionally, I related to the character Diego because of his big imagination and how I dealt with my issues using my big imagination. The beauty of his writing is that he offers solutions to young people so they don't just walk around feeling hopeless. I think it's just masterful what he did and the way he did it with the sidebars, with actual facts and information along with the fantasy. So it's less scary. It's more accessible to young people.
With a problem as massive as climate change, writers need to offer meaningful solutions. Besides the obvious adjustments in our homes, what can individuals do?
Well, you know, I know you're working with Citizens Climate Lobby, which is one of my favorite groups in the world. And of course, in my book, I talk about the science, the consequences, and the solutions. And for the solutions, I'm pushing a carbon tax, and in particular, the tax and dividend type of program that Citizens Climate Lobby has been advocating for a long time. And I think, you know, what I would say is keep doing that. It may sometimes seem like things are moving slow. I've been teaching about this topic since it's actually in my class notes from 1982 that I was teaching my astronomy students about global warming. So I've been doing this for a long time. It's easy to get frustrated at the slow pace of progress, but don't. Keep pushing. Things will happen because they have to happen. And I'm an optimist. I believe that when something has to happen, we'll find a way to get it done.
I encourage you to check out The Wizard Who Saved the World. It is available in English and in Spanish. Visit Jeff's website, jeffreybennett.com, or you can also go to bigkidscience.com. Jeff also loves to speak at schools. For elementary schools, he offers an everybody wins policy. He makes his visits free to the schools by having the visit paid for through sales of his books to students and teachers. You can see more of Roberta Collier Morales' work at her site, robertacolliermorales.com. I have a full listing of these links and more in our show notes. Just visit the blog at citizensclimatelobby.org and click on the Citizens Climate Lobby option. Look for episode 31. If you have an idea for the Art House, feel free to contact me. Radio at citizensclimate.org. That's radio at citizensclimate.org. Now it is time for our monthly Citizens Climate Radio Puzzler question. We've been considering this question, which gets directed towards religious people involved in climate work. What does your faith have to do with climate change? Sherry Michalovic called in with the following answer.
I'm a Christian and try to follow Jesus' teachings. And one of Jesus's most important teachings is to love our neighbors and our enemies as we love ourselves. But since climate change hurts my human neighbors and enemies, that breaks my heart the most. I live in an urban working class neighborhood, so most of my local neighbors have kids whose asthma has become exacerbated by pollution and climate change. And people in other parts of my country and countries around the world suffer and are dying from fires, droughts, landslides, crop failures, you know, and all the other effects of climate change.
Thank you very much, Sherry. I appreciate it. So, are you ready for our new puzzler question? It comes from longtime listener Chris Weingard. Thank you for suggesting this question, Chris. You are part of a group that pursues bipartisan economic solutions to addressing climate change. One of your co-workers, Janet, is a progressive liberal who also wants to see us do something about climate change. But she's pushing back against your ideas. She says, "Right now, I don't trust any plan that has conservatives involved. For all I know, this is some lying, greenwashing enemy of environmental justice that I can't trust." Janet has fears and doubts that need to be addressed. How would you respond? Send me your answers. Leave your name, contact info, and where you're from. Get back to me by January 15th, 2018. You can email your answers to radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. But what I love is when you do what Sherry did. Send me a voicemail of 3 minutes or less at 518-595-9414, plus one if calling from outside the USA. That number again is 518-595-9414. It's been a great year here at Citizens Climate Radio. Thank you for listening. Lots more up ahead in 2019. The show is written and produced by me, Peterson Toscano. Other technical support from Ricky Bradley, Brett Cease, and social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Monterano, Flannery Winchester, Allison Kubisco, and Steve Volk. Moral support from Madeline Pera. All of the music we use on the show is licensed unless otherwise specified. Be sure to share Citizens Climate Radio with your friends. Whenever possible, you can rate and review us, especially through Apple Podcasts. This makes a huge difference. You can find Citizens Climate Radio wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also listen at northernspiritradio.org. Join the discussion at our Facebook group page, facebook.com/groups/citizensclimateradio. You can hear special rebroadcasts of the Art House at the website artistsandclimatechange.com. Follow us on Twitter at Citizens C Radio. That's Citizens C Radio. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see info about our puzzler and find links to our guests. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.